Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Listen, everyone makes messes. It's just a part of life. And the bigger you live, the bigger the mess, if you know what I mean. That's why you need Fabuloso. With twice the active cleaning ingredients, it just completely takes the drama out of any mess. It smells great while you clean. The only way to describe it is the scent of passion. And once you're done cleaning, it lasts so long. You know, if you make a mess, you can get your home dramatically clean with Fabuloso. No worries.
Welcome to the Edge of Sports podcast, brought to you by The Nation Magazine. I'm Dave Zirin. Look, finding a podcast to talk about this current political moment is like falling out of a boat and hoping to hit the ocean. So that's not what we're doing here. You want to hear people talking about politics? There are other terrific Nation podcasts you can go to. Here on this pod, this is for the listeners. That's what we're about. We're about self-care here at the Edge of Sports podcast. And sometimes self-care means talking about some stuff that matters a lot to you and matters a lot to me. And that's the world of the National Basketball Association. So here on the pod, I'll be joined by hoop savant Arya Shirazi. And we're going to play a game called Do-Overs and Bourbon-Soaked Regrets. That's what I've decided to call it. We're making t-shirts. You see, Arya and I know regular listeners of the show are very aware of this, made a ton of predictions before the start of the 24-25 season. We're about a month now into the season. So the question is, based upon what we have seen, are there any predictions we wish we could do over? By the way, I just said a month. It's not a month at all. It's like you're like 10 games into the year. But based upon what we have seen, are there any predictions that we have made that we wish we could do over? Now, keep in mind, we could still be right later on a prediction if we have faith in it, even if it looks weak right now. That's not what we're talking about here. Like hanging with a stock when it drops because you think it'll go up again. We're not saying that. Like, for example, I really like the Charlotte Hornets coming into this year to be mighty frisky. And there they are, 4-5, I don't think people expected. But it's not necessarily quite frisky yet. But I think they're going to get there. What we're talking about here are just straight up regrets. Like, damn, I did not expect this person or team to come back or take the leap, or be awful. Okay, now that I've over-explained it, we can get started. So, Arya Shirazi, does all that sound kosher?
Quite.
Excellent.
Exactly as advertised.
Awesome. So, Arya, as you are, you know, the esteemed guest on this week's Edge of Sports podcast, brought to you by The Nation Magazine, I give thee the first dibs.
Well,
tell me something that you said on this program when we were previewing the Eastern and Western Conference that you're already confident you were wrong about.
Well, thanks much for the kind words and accompanying courtesy. When you suggested the idea for this chat, one of the ways you phrased it was buyer's remorse, very early in the season, as you said, not quite a month in, predictions that you'd either want to revoke or revise. And I thought it was a great idea. And realized that the predictions that I made that are not shaping up in the very early going as I forecast them. It's not remorse. It is more two teams and one player who I underestimated or underrated or didn't see the potential that they've exhibited in the early going. And I'll get the obvious one out of the way. I was critical of the notion of the Thunder as being heads and above the other teams in the West, or at least the clear favorite in the West. I took real umbrage to that. Not so much in defense of any other teams, but just because I was not nearly as high on them. I was not as high on them during their very surprising first place finish last year, and did not. I was very vocal about feeling as though they would not live up to those expectations that seemed to be nationally placed on them. Including by yourself. And I predicted that they would be 10 and 10 after 20 games, and that would kind of set the tone for a season that would not be nearly as accomplished as it was forecast to be. And we're not at 20 games yet. We're actually just around 10. But I can safely say I don't think they'll be 10 and 10 after 20 games. I think they'll be better than that. Oklahoma City has pretty much come out as people who thought they'd be the best team in the West were viewing. They have regularly beaten teams by double digits. And really, it's their what I think I did not give them nearly enough credit for, even though this is really what propelled them largely to being so good last year, is their defense. And I like to think that I place a lot of emphasis on a team's defensive players and defensive potential. But Oklahoma City's defense so far, and again, we're just 10 games in, but has been really great. And the times that I've seen them, it has been noticeable that they take teams out of their offenses and their comfort spots more than any other team. And they have the players to do it. So I think it really Oklahoma City's defense is really what has propelled them out to this pretty fabulous start. You talked about what if Holmgren makes a leap offensively? Certainly looks like he did. Chet looks, has added elements
I appreciate you saying that.
to his
Thank you.
offensive game that he didn't have last year in his outstanding rookie season. But if he was a third or fourth option last year, he has certainly stepped that up, looking like in the early going being a fairly legitimate second option next to a top five offensive player in the league. And he doesn't have to be a second option because their real second option is living up to that billing. Again, Jalen Williams, very fashionable pick. To make his first all-star appearance, and it's fashionable because it's likely to happen. He looks like an all-star,
He does.
and he's doing it on both ends. And it looks as he was last year, but really looks like the perfect second option to Gilgeous, who's shooting more threes this year and not going to the line quite as much, but still being the offensive motor in a team that's only lost once. And they're kind of splashy because they're not flashy, additions haven't even borne much fruit yet. Hartenstein has not played, so adding him to what they have going is only going to improve them, especially because after Holmgren, their inside game on both ends has not been their strength. So Isaiah should kind of maybe be the perfect ingredient to fill that hole. And Caruso, great player, but right now he's he hasn't played big minutes and hasn't really needed to. So, kind of following the Celtics model of being a really strong defensive team with a lot of interchangeable defensive parts and putting up a shitload of threes and having a bunch of guys that can hit enough to constantly be putting 3 points on the board in addition to your big scorers, it looks like my criticisms of Oklahoma City were unfounded.
And I'll just do one addition, a couple things. One, yeah, you nailed it. I mean, they're 8-1 as of this broadcast, and 8-1 is terrific. Then the one game they lost was just by a hair. The thing that I think I also want to revisit from what you said in the lead up was you took a lot of issue with their depth and with their bench. And I did say, like, yeah, they're young people, super hungry. They need to prove themselves. But, the word is they've got the goods. And not only do they have the goods, the coach did something really smart that I didn't foresee at all, but that he took Caruso out of the starting lineup and put in sometimes Aaron Wiggins, sometimes Cason Wallace. And what that does is it immediately put somebody who knows how to at least set up an offense and set up a defense in your second unit. So the second unit is an all greenhorns, which was one of the things that you were objecting to the first time. So I just thought it was a very clever move by Coach Daigneault to switch that, develop a player with all those first teamers and have Caruso head up a bench unit.
Yeah, I still don't see the Thunder coming out of the West. I don't think they're going to be the last team standing, but they look really fucking good after 10 games.
All right, my first one is, and this is the one like you took a big swing in saying the Thunder would be mediocre when everybody else said no. I took a swing that was not quite as big, but also counterintuitive and also a whiff. So it's sort of like you struck on a Randy Johnson fastball. You swung right through it. You didn't touch it on the Thunder. I swung right through some slow pitch softball, which is a little more depressing. But look, every podcast, you were really feeling good about what the Cleveland Cavaliers were going into this season. And your arguments, the arguments of the cognoscenti, the conventional wisdom, was feeling good about the hire of Kenny Atkinson as the coach. And also, we got Donovan Mitchell happy with a new contract. He's not going anywhere. And these guys will gel. Mobley, Allen, Darius Garland, Struce. They're going to gel together as one. And I was like, pshaw. That's not gonna happen. And my argument was that there's too much replication. Mitchell, Garland, very similar play, undersized guards, very dynamic on offense. They make you nervous on defense. Mobley, Allen, inside, would Mobley be better as a center? Does that screw things up? That was me. And everybody else was like, that's ridiculous. Great players figure it out. Last year was a weird year, and they still did really great things. Because you remember last year, like Darius Garland had like his jaw broken and was in all that crazy pain all year, and it just everything was a little bit hinky. They didn't like Bickerstaff. So I was totally wrong about this. They're 8-0 for frick's sake. as we're doing this. They've not lost a game.
I think it's 10-0, Dave, now.
Holy guacamole. Jeez. I mean,
Because
it's more.
they beat the snot out of Golden State last night. They were up 40 at halftime.
It's unreal. I mean, I mean, frankly, that reminds me a little bit of Golden State, where it's like that. You remember this with the Splash Brothers? They weren't dominant until they were. Do you remember that? Like they were like, a 45 win team with Mark Jackson. I think he got him over 50 one year. And they were just another good team in the West. And the next year, they're a juggernaut. The Cavs are a juggernaut. And the person I just want to give some props to, in addition to Atkinson, and then I'll throw it to you, is Donovan Mitchell. Because I saw the game. I've seen a couple of the games, and he is more unselfish than I have ever seen him play. And sure enough, I went to the stat sheet before our broadcast, and it was like, oh, Donovan's averaging 22 a game. That's low for Donovan Mitchell. And it's because he's sharing the wealth. He's making sure everybody eats. He lets Darius run the show. And Darius Garland is dynamic as hell. So it's actually like a lot of fun when he does this too. And Mobley is getting developing more. I don't think he's quite where the Mobley fanatics think he is or where he's going to be. I'm more doubtful on Mobley, but as a supporting guy, scoring 18 points and 8 boards a game and being a terrific defender and shot blocker, of course, he'll take that every time. So I couldn't have been more wrong about the Cavs. I was stupid. Okay, that's it.
No, yes, I've liked Cleveland. As long as this has been the core of Cleveland the last few years, once Mitchell came on board, I've liked the Cavs. And I did not necessarily see them being undefeated at this point in the year, and especially kind of winning the way that they've been winning. We talked about how the Thunder are winning decisively. Cleveland is as well. I mean, last night's demolition of the Warriors notwithstanding, they've been winning pretty handily, doing it on both ends of the floor. I think it's a great your Jackson to Kerr with the Warriors comparison. It looks like it might be perfect because I actually, when I was praising the Cavs and I liked them preseason more than you did, I wasn't feeling as though I was a big Bickerstaff fan. I love the job JB did. And as I had said, I thought that he was scapegoated in a situation that did not require a scapegoat. So I was not somebody, if Kenny Atkinson is proving to either be a significant leap as a head coach or just somebody who can get even more out of this group of players, then that is a big factor. But I was not, part of the reason I liked the Cavs was not just because of the head coaching change, because I've really liked the way they've played the last few years.
May I jump in real quick,
Of course.
just to not get off that particular string? The Atkinson difference, as I see it, is remembering that Cleveland Cavaliers Orlando Magic series where it was the most offensively ugly thing I've ever seen. Atkinson treats this team as if they're like the greatest show on turf, St. Louis Rams. He's like, oh, I've got all this talent. Let's go. So they're shooting a lot faster. They're running. And you see the scores, 130 one night. It's like that wasn't the Bickerstaff way. So Atkinson turbocharging them is certainly, obviously, I didn't foresee it. And obviously, that's making a big difference.
Absolutely. The completely correct. Just my last words on Cleveland and their start is I don't necessarily see Mobley. If Mobley has fanatics, I have not been one of them. I don't see Mobley as a future superstar. I see Mobley as somebody that can certainly be a starting power forward and key contributor on a championship team. I knew that Mitchell and Garland could coexist because of what they did in their first years together. You had mentioned Garland's jaw injury. He was banged up all year, and for some reason that was mistaken as him having this really down year and that backcourt just doesn't work. And I thought there was no real, I thought the reasons that the productivity took a dip were the most obvious reasons there could be. So I knew they could work together. Yes, it's somewhat undersized. Yeah, it is undersized, but that's no longer a deal breaker in today's league. And if Mitchell is a point guard size two guard, Darius is a bit of a big point guard. So they're not totally mini. They're just kind of similarly sized. Yes, I totally agree about Mitchell's kind of commitment. Mitchell has put up big numbers in this league. He's won more than he's lost over two teams, and he's, I'm sure, gotten all NBA team recognition, probably with both Utah and Cleveland. So Mitchell knows that Mitchell's been a top 15 player in the NBA for a long time. I think he's ready to win. And with him signing this max extension, the next few years of Cavalier basketball, this is Donovan Mitchell's team. And I know that Donovan Mitchell wants any team that's kind of under his leadership to be a team that competes for a championship. So if
Don't
that
you
means he knows he can score 28 a night, but the team is going to be better served with him scoring 22 a night, because that means that Darius Garland gets to put up big scoring numbers and he's that kind of player, and Jared Allen, for all of his contributions on defense, gets the ball in his hands a lot to reward him for that, then Mitchell is absolutely that kind of player. It's the maturity of an all-star player. And yeah, Cleveland looks, yeah, they're the best team in the league so far.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I throw it to you, what's for your next regret? I just gotta say real quick, I love the fact that like Donovan Mitchell isn't like, wow, I could form a dynasty with Giannis or something like that, and really is saying, hey, I want to see if I could take a team to a title with me being the guy who it revolves around. And I just love that that's his sense of ambition, and that I think it's backed up by how good he plays and his leadership, charisma, all the stuff. I mean, he just might be the guy. We'll find out. All right, throwing it to you, Ari. What's your next regret?
Yeah, and again, and and maybe this is just pride talking, but it's not even a regret. It's more of so far it looks like I was wrong, and that's the Golden State Warriors. Before the Warriors got their asses handed to them by the Cavs last night, they had only lost once, and that they beat the Celtics in Boston just a few games ago. And so far, Steve Kerr is doing looking looks like he's on his way to one of the very best coaching jobs of his career, because he did a lot of winning with the best roster in the league for a long time, but he does not have the best roster in the league. Far from it. And they've gotten off to, in my mind, a very, very surprising start. I liked what when we talked about them in our season preview, I liked their off-season additions, but didn't think that it would tilt enough of a balance in their favor to rise in the standings. Again, we can, that's the point of this show, but it's super early. But their offseason, Buddy Hield looks like a better version of Klay Thompson right now. And Kyle Anderson has also been in the rotation from the beginning and is playing a lot of fourth quarter minutes, and they've only lost twice, so they're winning those fourth quarters. I don't expect Golden State to finish in the top four when all is said and done with this team. If they basically keep this team, I really do not think they're going to finish top four. I had them at number 11. I had them winning probably around 44 to 46 games and being on the outside looking in of the play-in just because I thought there were enough solid teams in the West that win total wouldn't would kind of land them there. The Warriors look like they're going to be in the playoff picture. Obviously, so much is kind of predicated on Curry's health, but he already missed a few early season games and they won those games handily. So, in this small early season sample size, I have been surprised by the Warriors' success, and it looks as though the collection of parts that they have look like they're a more solid sum than I saw them a few weeks ago.
But you're saying right now that you're confident that this car is built for distance. Like, because this could also still fall apart. Like, it's still very early in the season. Like, there are a lot of things in the NBA that look good right now. Like, Cam Thomas is MVP candidacy that you could see falling apart. But you're saying right now that you feel that the Warriors are built to last, maybe not at the level they're at now, but in a way that has them right in the middle of the playoff picture.
No. If I seem to be leaning that way, I don't feel that way. I don't think that the Warriors, as currently constructed, are going to be solidly in the playoff picture. I think that they are looking better than I thought that they would look, and I don't have any tangible reason for thinking any of it won't sustain. But I think that teams that have gotten off to slower starts will start to come into their groove more, or players will get healthy, which will lead to more wins for teams that are currently below Golden State. And even if Golden State doesn't suffer anything catastrophic, no, I think the Warriors will be in the play-in conversation the entire year. Where they fall in that, I don't know. And right in the early going, it's looking like they're going to be in a much more advantageous position than I had them in. But I do think that Golden State is one injury away from being a non-factor. And I certainly am not ready to say no, they are solidly in the playoff picture. I think they're still subject to having to be accountable for the areas in which they aren't so strong.
Yeah, I like the Warriors before the start of the season, and I actually think they're better than I thought. I think top four is very realistic for them as currently constructed. Of course, you mentioned injuries, and of course, you could say that about a lot of teams, but of course,
Absolutely.
but no. But with the Warriors particularly, you can't say that word without thinking of Curry, and if anything happens to Curry, then it's all done. That's the whole point of Steph Curry. Everything revolves around him. Why,
Right. And you actually
it's
said it right. There are the other teams. I'm sorry to cut you off, Dave. There are the other teams that I think are right in that level is Golden State, who are better equipped to suffer an injury absence from their top guy, are able to hold down the fort much better than Golden State. I agree. Curry missing any more than 2 or 3 games in a row, I think the Warriors would be in long-term trouble.
Yeah, and I also think Buddy Hield, even who's having one of the great bench seasons, like he would be a unanimous sixth man of the year if the season ended today, scoring like 22 a game in 25 minutes. It's nuts. And but I actually think it's not impossible to think that this could be a season-long heater for Buddy Hield, not just a 10-20 game stretch. And the reason why I'm just saying that is Because Steph pulls so much gravity towards him, Buddy Hield, think about the teams he's played on. Like, he has never gotten this much airspace to shoot in his entire career. That's the one thing dude knows how to do. So he is just stepping into three-pointers. He's not taking a lot off these dumb dribbles and sidesteps. It's got to feel like practice to Buddy Hield. And so I think this is built to last. My next regret, my regret. All right. So the Detroit Pistons are 4-6 right now, and I did not think they'd be much at all. And I did think they'd be better because, you know, Monty Williams was, you know, I don't know, doing something else last year. And now they have Bickerstaff, JB Bickerstaff, actually organizing the team. But what I'm wrong about with the I still think the Pistons aren't going to have a great year, but they've impressed me. Bickerstaff, the way he's organized them offensively has been great. Jalen Duren, he's got him playing minutes. Like Monty had the weirdest rotation when you go back and think about it. Like, playing your best young players seems like a good idea. But the thing that I was really wrong about, because I still think the Pistons are a year away from doing anything close to serious damage in terms of knocking on the door even of the play-in. But I think next year, that's a real thing. But the thing that I did not see coming, what I was totally wrong about, is a gentleman by the name of Jaden Ivey, who I thought was part of the problem on this team. Like, they blew a high draft pick on this guy, and they feel like they have nowhere to play him because they have Cade. Do they double up? Do they play the same position? What do you do that they don't work together? Blah, blah, blah. And what Bickerstaff has sort of unleashed is an idea that Monty Williams didn't seem to agree with, which is if you put two talented guards out there, they will figure it out. It's basketball. For God's sakes, they'll figure it out. And while Cade, as a lot of people know, is averaging like 23 a game, and he's looking great out there, a ton of assists as well, Jaden Ivey is averaging 20 a game in just 32 minutes. It's amazing. I didn't see that coming at all. I thought he was part of the problem in Detroit. Now he looks like an absolutely vital piece for the future. I was wrong about Jaden Ivey, and for that, I say, je regret.
I was higher on Detroit than you were. I thought this
yes.
was the year that they made a tangible jump from worst team in the league to a team where you can see them rising and what they could possibly be, and bringing in a few veterans, I thought was certainly part of that progression. I did have them knocking on the play-in, and now I have them in the play-in.
Ooh, spicy.
So I think that Detroit is actually, as you said, they're 4-6. I've caught a little Detroit, and they could very easily actually be 6-4 or 7-3. And then actually the conversation just, the record would look a lot different, and the conversation would be different. Kind of everything I thought that I liked about what the Pistons might be, it looks like they could do that. which still, as you said, has a definite ceiling for this year and probably next year. But you had talked about the guards. And, yeah, I have not watched a lot of Pistons over the last few years. There really hasn't been much reason to. But every time I've seen Jaden Ivey, I've liked him.
Mm-hmm.
He's always looked like an NBA guard.
Agreed.
Doing the things well that good NBA guards do. And he's done it in just a shitload of losses. So it's been easy to think that, as you said, high lottery pick doesn't look like a difference maker,
Because
you know.
Monty wouldn't play him.
Yeah, wouldn't play him with Cade.
Or in crunch time. So you drew conclusions about what was happening in practice.
Neither of them right now is any kind of a knockdown shooter. And if one or both of them adds that to their game, then the Pistons could potentially have an all-star backcourt. But both of those guys, we had talked about Mitchell and Garland. And part of what makes that such a great backcourt is that both can play either guard position. Garland is the more traditional point guard, but Mitchell's played a lot of point in his career. As you said, is an unselfish player, can approach the game as a playmaker. So whoever has it going between Garland and Mitchell can be the primary scorer on any given night, with the other one the facilitator. I see that in Detroit, at best, but just bigger. Because both
Yeah.
of those guards are big. Both of Detroit's guards are bigger than both of Cleveland's guards. So if you have a backcourt, still an incredibly young backcourt that can grow together where either one can be a playmaker or a featured scorer, and you can add the element of three-point shooting to their games, then that's the foundation for a successful rebuild for the Pistons.
Nice. Okay. Yeah, and you were, let's just say it explicitly, you saw Detroit being good. I saw Ivy as you did. I was like, that's an NBA player, but just it felt like there was so much Monty Williams produced smoke around him that you assume there's a fire. And I think now it's much more that Monty was kind of out for lunch, out to lunch, getting a check. Everybody knows the story. He had to be talked into the job a million times. They kept sweetening the deal. And, go Monty. All
Go
right.
Monty.
I mean, what else can you say about a former Knick, former first round draft pick out of Notre Dame? All right, to you, Shiraz, number
Money
three.
for nothing and your chicks for free.
We got to move some microwave ovens.
My third, I was wrong is on a player. And it is a second year player who I really didn't see much as a rookie. So he didn't have a knockout rookie season, and I really wasn't familiar with his game and thus didn't factor any kind of growth or even really his presence into the overall outlook of his team. And the team he's on is not good, and I don't think they're going to be good this year, but it really looks like Grady Dick is a ball player in Toronto. As I said, I did not watch much Raptors last year. So really, if I did see him play, he didn't stand out. But in the early going and getting run in the starting lineup from the get because of early season injuries, he's looked great this year. And he's what? I mean, he probably, what did he play? Like one season at Kansas or something? So he's still incredibly young. Again, this is, this might seem a little hyperbolic because it's so early in the year. Plenty of players have gotten off to a great 15, 20-year start and then fallen back to earth a little bit. But Grady Dick absolutely looks like a future all-star. Just with his kind of diversified offensive game. And if this is the player that he is going to be, or he can improve on the skills that he's already exhibiting, then he is absolutely part of that young core that you were saying preseason you already like. You were already higher on what the Raptors' young core could be than me. And I don't even know that you were necessarily putting Grady into that into that picture. Maybe you were. I'm sorry, I don't mean to speak for you. I mean, Scotty Barnes, RJ Barrett, Grady, and quickly, all four of those guys positionally and where they operate on the floor seem to complement one another very, very well. And if those guys maximize their games or wind up as better players than I think they're going to be, then Toronto has the makings of something that should be pretty good.
Yeah, hit by the injury bug a little bit to start the year, but I like what they have. Yeah, 2-7 right now, these Toronto Raptors. But Grady Dick has been good. What I didn't like about Grady Dick, and while I'll always wonder about Grady Dick, is when he and Anthony Black posed with their jerseys next to each other last year. So it would say Black Dick. Now, I think at some point you got to show them, you got to, I mean, people might think I'm joking around right now as if I'm like John Lithgow in Footloose, like no dancing in this town. I'm not doing that. I'm saying like when you're a young guy, and this goes to Anthony Black too, super young last year as a rookie. When you're a young guy in the NBA, it's like you want to show. Because you're living with men on the road. You want to show that you belong. And I just am trying to think about like if Magic was on that team and he saw that, or Buck Williams, someone would get put in a garbage can. Charles Oakley, can you fucking imagine?
Yeah, I think they
So,
know that those guys aren't in the league anymore.
damn.
They're not going to have to face that kind of retribution.
But not even, I mean, there's not even like a Larry Sanders. Like who would be the toughest guy in the NBA at this point? Who would be most likely to throw Mr. Black or Mr. Dick in a garbage can?
Steven Adams?
You think so? I think he'd
I
hurt
don't
his
know.
back. Very injury prone.
I don't know. I mean, I truth be told, Dave, you're sounding a little John Lithgow in Blowout right now.
You mean like, oh damn. Okay, moving on. And the correct answer is Jonas Valanciunas. Okay. Yeah. Well, Prav, now you see how it all comes together. Okay.
They better hope Jonas doesn't arrive in either one of their towns.
Exactly not. I think I was trying to do more of a John Lithgow and Ricochet. Good movie. All
It's when
right.
Denzel was on top of the world.
Although I just saw Equalizer 3, which just came out last year, and it was absolutely fantastic.
Oh, so he's still rarefied.
Yes. Okay. So this is one that's actually hard for me to say. I have lived in DC for quite a bit at this point, and last season was the least amount of Washington Wizards basketball I had seen since I moved here. I barely watched any because when I did, it was so boring and they were so bad, and there was nothing to latch on to as a viewer or a fan, and I sort of had the whole, well, all right, if they don't care, why should I care? Approach. And I, re-mainlined into my childhood team, the New York Knicks, and that was where I went the rest of the season. And before this season began, the Washington Wizards were voted the least watchable team in the NBA. And so I watched a little at the start of the year, just as almost like a tip of the cap to the organization. And they are actually really fun to watch. They're not winning that much, although they beat the Hawks twice. But they start three rookies, all of whom are under 20 years old, two 18s and a 19, Alex Saar, Bub Carrington, Kyshawn George, and they're all amazing. I mean, they don't really know what they're doing, but they're fascinating to watch. And all three are keepers. I'm saying that right now. All three will be NBA guys of the first order. But the thing that makes them really fun to watch, really amazing, is the combination of the aforementioned Jonas Valanciunas and Bilal Coulibaly. Bilal Coulibaly, the second-year teenager from France, you might remember him from the Olympics, is the smoothest player in the NBA. He is smooth. He's like if DeMar DeRozan, who's incredibly smooth, was on roller skates. That's what Bilal Coulibaly is like. To watch him move on the court is amazing. And oh, by the way, as a teenager, he also shoots 40% from three. And he will make you exploit that. Now, the thing about Valanciunas, though, is that Bilal Coulibaly, you know, his growth plates aren't done. Like, he's still going to grow more. I mean, and that also means he's a thin guy. And last year, one of the problems was he kept getting knocked to the ground all the time. This year, playing with Jonas Valanciunas, nobody's knocking him to the ground. And it's been amazing to watch their chemistry all year as Valanciunas uses his grizzly bear frame to clear entire sections of the zone for Coulibaly to do something amazing. So that's where I was totally wrong, and I even owe an apology to a team that's given me a lot of good memories over the years. The Washington Wizards are a watchable and even somewhat compelling NBA team.
My only comment on that is that I'm glad that they're more watchable than you anticipated. And I don't mean that in a facetious kind of way.
But it sounds that way, and it's funny.
You know, it's endearing. It's endearing for a fan to say after 9-10 games that three rookies are keepers. It is. It really is, you know. And again, and I haven't watched Washington, so I have no idea what Kyshawn George's game is. I know that he put up like 13 threes a few games ago, so I know he likes to chuck it.
He is a chucker.
I know you were very high on Carrington in summer league. I've never seen him play. And Sarr, I mean, it sounds like, you know, in this early going, you've done an about face. You were kind of punchlining Sarr a little bit. And now, you know, and now he's the next great Wizard big man. Mm-hmm. So
in the tradition of Jorge Mirasan.
Quite a tradition. Do you feel like there's a correlation to them being more watchable and freewheeling and energetic since Kuzma is sidelined? Does that kind of, in your mind, expedite the need to cash Kuzma out for more young players who kind of fit that mold? Or do you see Kyle as possibly being part of what might be a more exciting brand of Wiz basketball than anybody was anticipating for the next few years?
If Kyle Kuzma was traded for nothing, it would be addition by subtraction.
Okay.
And you're talking to somebody who likes Kuz, but the second he refused a trade to the Dallas Mavericks because he wanted to have a team that was his team, like, do you remember we were talking about that with Donovan Mitchell and the Cavs? And we were like, yeah, take the challenge. You go, Donovan. You go, Spider. Yes. But Kuzma saying it, he just sounds like, you know, delusional and lame. Like, I'll lead a team. You're not good enough. I'll lead the Wizards. Freaking prime Michael Jordan wouldn't be good enough. I mean, And you know, non-prime Michael Jordan certainly wasn't good enough. So, floor Jordan said it. Okay. So I want Kuzma out of there, please. I mean, he's a disgruntled presence. He puts up a ton of shots when I actually want these young people putting up those shots and getting those reps. because they're smooth and fun to watch, and they share and they slap each other on the back. They're very, very easy to root for. And Kyle Kuzma is not easy to root for. So I just want the whole vibe of the team to be positive. And Kyle, lately, I'm sorry, with all respect, bringing that negative energy. All right, Shiraz, we've done the 3-3, but now I've got a surprise question for you. Shiraz doesn't know this is coming. I had a feeling this wouldn't be on your three list, Shiraz. So I put it to the side in my notes to be like, I'm going to ask him about this. One of the stories of the NBA thus far is the start of the Philadelphia 76ers, as well as the general chaos in the locker room, Joel Embiid pushing a reporter, a lot of angry vibes in there. People are talking about, I read one thing about, Paul George in a game that Maxey was just killing. Paul George shot what should have been the game-winning shot, and Maxey's in it bricked, and Maxey's just standing there like, ball, please. It's like, I don't know, you're not playoff P, buddy. And so, oh man, it's a complicated organism, these Philadelphia 76ers. They just are. And it's hard to see that going anywhere. And we don't even know when Embiid is coming back. So the question to you, Shiraz, is any regrets in the high ceiling, the upper echelon, where you put these Philadelphia 76ers in our pregame preview preseason event?
Yeah, absolutely not. And of course, that's a valid question. I'm not, certainly a 1-7 start is not what was anticipated, but if it was 3-5, then that wouldn't be surprising either. I mean, I have not been aware, because I don't really probe much. I'm not aware of any kind of disgruntledness or any kind of acrimony in the locker room besides Embiid being angry at the reporter. So, if there's already grumbling, then that is a problem, but I said at the beginning, I said the Sixers, my prediction was the Sixers were going to win the championship. But I didn't know how many regular season wins they're going to get, because especially when two of the three players who are the primary causes for me feeling as though they're going to ultimately be the best team in the league, with their injury history, I wasn't going to say, yeah, they're going to finish one or they're going to finish. To me, it didn't matter. Clearly with Maxey, Embiid hasn't played yet. Maxey's now down for a few weeks with a hamstring injury. So that's bad news. The bad news continues. You said, who knows when Joel's going to come back? I haven't heard. My understanding is that it's going to be against the Knicks.
Wow.
He's serving. He just served the first game of the suspension because he was on the active list. And I think that if he hadn't been suspended, he would have played in their last game against the Lakers. So I think he has two more suspended games, and then he's going to play against the Knicks, and Maxey won't be there.
Well, it's interesting. So, oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's an interesting game within a game with the Sixers, because Nick Nurse, assumedly in discussion with Daryl Morey, all they want to do is have George and Embiid in as tip-top shape as possible when the playoffs start. However, they have to make sure also that, I don't think they want to be in the play-in. I think they want to be at least a sixth seed. I don't think they want their entire season to come down to, oh, Joel rolled an ankle. You don't want to leave it up to, or some player going, remember when the Miami Heat won that one playoff game against the Celtics because the Miami Heat shot like 60% from three or something? That was the only freaking game they won. they suck and the Celtics didn't. So yeah, so that's where I end up on that, man. Like,
Listen, right now they're the, they have the worst record in the NBA. So any point of discussion I think is valid. What they have shown the last few years is when Embiid plays, they win almost every game. And when he doesn't, they struggle. That was the case last year, and now they have Paul George. Who, as we've been over this, I think Paul George is now looked incorrectly looked at as over the hill all of a sudden. I think he's by far the third, if he's your third best player, I think he's the best third a team, the best third best player in the league, which is why my final prediction is my final prediction. I totally agree with you that they don't at one, this the season isn't going to be limitless forever. So you don't want to dig yourself hardly any more of a hole than you're in now in the very early going and have to dig yourself out of. You would hope not to be in the play-in. But again, Embiid, the reason that I don't think there's panic, or at least there's no panic among me in New York City, talking about the 76ers is because their top player, who is a top three player in the NBA, has not played yet. So to me, I mean, there's no, I still say, long story short, if the 76ers go into the postseason, no matter what their seed, and yes, they'd rather it be three than seven. They'd rather it be six than 10 for sure. And I think it's way too early still to make any kind of predictions about where they might wind up in April. But if the 76ers go into the postseason with their three main guys in the lineup and mostly healthy, playoff healthy, I think that they're the best team in the league.
Okay, we will see. And I also want to throw in, I guess, my version of that, like someone or something that I took a big swing on that certainly doesn't look that like it's there right now, but I could care less, is Victor Wembanyama. Slow start to the year. He had a big summer with the Olympics in Paris. They still haven't quite figured out how to use him. Big deal.
People wanted him to be the best player in the league from as soon as the season started. And he wasn't going to be that.
Ridiculous.
I agree. There's no reason for any kind of super young player. He's going to be great.
Yeah. All right.
The last I'll say is that I think the reason that any kind of whatever like remorse for me is teams that I underrated, as I said, who have looked a lot better both on the court and in the win total than I had given them credit for, or I thought that they were capable of. As a, there aren't teams that I'm like, ooh, I really, I expected big things, and they just do not look. The two teams, one in the East, one in the West, that I had higher hopes for. The Sixers, obviously, and New Orleans have been racked by injuries. So, the Pelicans, I mean, it's been, it's nuts that, like their lack of healthy bodies, and they can't, gain any continuity. But yeah, as I said, the teams that have gotten off to poor starts that I thought would be good, are directly because they have not been able to field their preferred lineups, or in New Orleans team, any lineup really. So I still believe that those teams, once healthy and if healthy, will right themselves.
So what prediction that you made do you feel best about at this point in the season? Are you most sort of like, blowing on your knuckles and being like, yeah, I saw that. Do you have any of those? For me, I'll just do first so you can have a chance to think, because I'm springing that on you a little bit. So you can take a second and think. As I say, I was a year too early last year on the Phoenix Suns. And when the season started this year, all those old guys are a year older. But I said on the show, what they were missing was just a point guard to organize the offense. Tyus Jones, Monty Morris. They got this kid, Ryan Dunn, who nobody saw coming. Kevin Durant is an MVP candidate without question. Bradley Beal has realized that he is the third wheel, and he's lucky to be that. And, Devin Booker's coming back from the Olympics with a lot of confidence, and Mike Budenholzer's the guy. All this stuff I said was going to happen, it happened. Huzzah! What about you, Shiraz?
Yeah, no. Well, again, it's very gratifying, obviously, as we talked about, that Cleveland's gotten off to the start that they have, because I've really liked them for the past couple of years, and and clearly they've anybody who was high on them is looking pretty good right now. For me, I think it's the Kings. I had said I thought the Kings were going to have a very sneaky good year and were actually going to climb up the standings while more hype teams dealt with stuff on the road to the playoffs, that Sacramento was just going to be very steady. And even if they don't have a knockout record so far, I really like the way they're playing. And actually, I think they started 0-2, and since then, maybe they've only lost one or two times. So, and again, I've only seen them a couple of times, but adding DeRozan, which I was very high on, and I thought he'd be able to be integrated fairly seamlessly with their existing all-stars. Again, through the very early sliver of the season, that group is looking very good. And when you add Malik Monk to that, who's capable of being a fourth quarter closer, in certain games, I feel pretty solid in Sacramento, being a top four team at the end of the year.
Wow. When you think about DeRozan, Fox, and Monk, does any team have three better off the dribble crunch time scorers where you can just imagine as a coach the luxury of that? Like, let's see who has the hot hand tonight. Okay, Malik, it's your turn to shoot the game winner with 40 seconds to go. I mean, that is something that I think what you saw, Ari, that a lot of people didn't see is that these guys would all mesh. Like some folks said, they just don't mesh. Other folks said it'll take time. But, DeRozan's such a damn pro. And I think he's going to be playing when he's like 45 years old. Very
No,
cool.
and it's also Sabonis's ability to be such a initiator from the high post and the low post, and DeRozan is kind of a perfect player to be able to play off that kind of playmaking big man that I would have been surprised if they didn't work well together. And so far it's looked good.
Awesome. Well, this is another episode of the Edge of Sports podcast. I'm Dave Zirin. Ari, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me again, man. A lot of fun.
Yeah, but before we go, I wanted to let you know, Ari, that I just watched the 1997 version of 12 Angry Men. Are you aware of this?
Yeah, is Charles Dutton one of the angry men?
No. But the
Oh.
cast is unbe-frickin-leavable.
Give me a few luminaries.
All right. Should I start with, all right, let's start with, there's one legend. Let's start with the legend. Ossie Davis. Then let's go with the Oscar nominee, Edward James Olmos. Then let's go with the Oscar winners, George C. Scott and Jack Lemmon. Then let's go with the future legend, here, still just a character actor, James Gandolfini. Then let's go with someone who is an amazing stage actor. People might know him, Courtney B. Vance. And then a legend, Hume Cronyn. Hume Cronyn from Cocoon. I'm almost done, everybody. Then the star of To Live and Die in LA, William Peterson. That's not too exciting, but I saved the best for last. The best for last. Better than Lemon, even. Tony fucking Danza.
I'm floored.
That's your 12 Angry Men.
I'm speechless.
That cast. It's the most
An
amazing
angrier
cast.
dozen, a dirtier dozen.
That does not exist.
I was barely aware of this, and that seems like an absolute dream cast. It doesn't quite seem the same without Klugman, who was,
Yeah, that's it's Klugman's film,
you
I
know,
think.
who was really kind of the backbone of the Lumet version from the 50s. But no, that what that's a really powerhouse ensemble.
Yes, indeed. I mean, Lemon doing his best work as a crotchety old man. Shelley the Machine Levine in Glengarry Glen Ross.
And George C. is one of my all-time faves.
Oh yeah. What's the this will be interesting real quick. I know we gotta go. George C. Scott, first movie that comes to your head, quick.
Strangelove.
Wow, interesting. You go with Dr. Strangelove. Can you guess what mine was? I'll give you one guess.
Patton.
The Hustler.
Ooh.
Just
Great.
like jumped into my head
Oh, he's
when I
great in
saw him.
that. Yeah. Yeah. Good
And
choice,
then
man.
thanks. And then just real quick, Jack Lemmon, first film.
Some like it hot.
Okay. You want to guess mine? You
Save the
should be able
Tiger.
to. Yeah, say it again. Say it again.
Save the Tiger.
That is correct. All right, for everybody out there listening,
Now they're
please
making
stay
jock
frosty.
straps out of the flag.
Now they're making jock straps out of the flag. We are out of here. Peace.